I'm putting on the recorder. Okay. Card one. The universe. Card two. Hierophant. Card three, Queen of Discs. Card four, Nine of Cups, Happiness.
That was happiness, you said?
Yes.
Can you give, what was it specifically?
Nine of Cups.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
Card five, Eight of Wands, Swiftness. Card six, Eight of Swords, Interference. The Arc of Influence, Chariot, Two of Cups, Love, Two of Swords, Peace.
Number one is the universe. Number two is the Hierophant. Number three is the Queen of Discs. Number four is the Nine of Cups, Happiness. Number five is the Eight of Wands, Swiftness. Number six is the Eight of Swords, Interference. Number seven is the Chariot. Number eight is the Two of Cups, Love. And number nine is the Two of Swords, Peace. So that is our reading for today.
And you suggested that we open up the PDF by Iwu Nala?
Right, page 180.
So we're in the radiant, the way my PDF is, it's 1, the radiant heavenly city, 2, the judgment of Solomon, 3, misty magic land, 4, a fairy romance.
It's the page, put it on, click it into page.
Okay.
Don't try to use those hyperlinks, they won't
okay.
work.
It's not working.
Yeah, they won't work because they were just
on
the internet. This is a PDF.
When I click on Promethea, the Notes and Annotations by Aram Nala,
yeah.
I get, let me open it up a little bit more. Do I have to go to Angel Fire?
No, what you do is you see over on the side there says, pages, signatures, bookmarks.
My preview didn't open up that way.
Well, there is a way with a PDF to get a pages option open. That's how you find the pages.
Oh, see, on the Mac it's not doing that. Is it doing it on yours?
Cynthia, I'm on a Mac.
Right.
At the top of the menu bar, do you know the menu bar?
Yes, I do.
And it shows you, on the left, it shows you a printer, it shows you a floppy disk.
No, mine says file, edit.
Below that.
Below
that, I don't have anything. I have previous, next, zoom, move, text, select.
You have.
Well, do you have, what about at the bottom? Do you have a page number thing at the bottom?
No. No, I don't. I have,
do you have two arrows?
Notes and annotations. And then it says for last series, 26 to 32, you go to this link, but the link is busted.
Yeah, but that's noise. That's noise, Cynthia.
Okay.
We're asking you to navigate through the Adobe Acrobat
now it's coming
material.
On.
It took forever
to come on. I can't explain why. It's a very
That's the way just you download it.
Yeah.
Now what? Yeah, I'm gonna have to once it's completely open. What page do you want us on?
182.
Okay.
Okay,
but I don't have the ability just to navigate to 182 for some bizarre reason. Maybe the sidebar will open up eventually.
There should be a way for you to do page
there
open.
There should be, yeah. There usually
under,
is.
Under edit, under view, you have navigation tabs. If you go view navigation tabs, and then it's going to open up, it's going to have articles, attachments, so forth and so on. And if it goes down there, you'll see pages. Click pages.
I actually don't have that.
You don't have a backwards and forwards arrow?
File edit view?
I have next, previous, go to page. I'm going to see if I have. I can pick a page, but
can
I can't.
Well, then pick.
It was 125?
182.
180.
182. 180. Okay, let's see what happens when they do that.
And what should come up?
Yes, it came up the Tree of Life.
Yeah, as a.
Very nice.
Okay, so you're in. That's it. We'll be going up and down that area. The way you can do it is using your scroll bar by just clicking up and down. We'll get you from the one page to the next.
Actually, I have to put it in. I have to type it in.
Well, that's.
You don't have a scroll bar off of the.
Have a scroll bar, but it only covers one page.
Well, that's true. But if you click up one more, it'll take you up to the previous or the next page.
If I go down and I go like that.
Okay, listen, we're...
I see, yes, it does say next page.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know you could do that.
Okay, all right, well, let's...
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, this is not how to use...
This is not how to use your Mac.
All right, there's only a few of us today, which I think the summer is finally taking its toll on our attendance list. I am happy that Joy's joined us, though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get going with chapter 2 here of book 3.
I'll take the store clerk and Sharon.
I'll do Barbara.
You'll be do Barbara?
Oh, of course. Me and Barbara, we resonate. Over Hell Prometheus are great for me.
Cynthia.
We're doing Moon River, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing Moon River, number 14.
Okay.
Also known as Chapter 2 in this book 3. And we are. Joy, do you have a book?
I do.
Oh, great.
Fantastic. So we can ask you to be a
Joy.
Would you like to be Stacia and Promethea? Those are big parts. But there's not a lot of us. I'll be the various shades. I'll be Bane and some of the other characters.
Yeah, I'll be the store clerk and Sharon.
I'll be whoever you want me to be.
Yeah. So we're just gonna. So if we come to these. Let me do a quick look at the characters here. So basically, what it is it's the Stacy and the store clerk are very minor
Maitre D and Steve. I can do that.
Okay.
We have a lot of guys in this one.
I'll do John Kendrick Spangs and Baron Munchausen. And,
do you know what Munchausen syndrome is?
Yes.
there's on that in that PDF. There's a whole little biography about Baron Munchausen.
And Munchausen syndrome?
No.
Well, not about Munchausen syndrome. No, that's derivative.
Oh, all right.
That's basically people who believe their own fantasies, but to the detriment.
No, no. Munchausen syndrome is a mother who makes her child sick. It's
but it has nothing to do with Baron Munchausen.
Oh, all right. It's just the idea of Munchausen.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, no, yeah. What it is it's being, it's making, it's the fantasy is you make your child sick so that you can be the center of attention, taking care of the child.
Talk about warped ego, yeah.
No, no. As a matter of fact, it doesn't necessarily come from a warped ego. Mothers, for instance, young mothers whose children have had cancer, for instance, and they lost their child, they have another child, and they can't believe how much work having a child is, because they always had assistance with the ill child. So they are constantly making up reasons to go back to the hospital.
Yeah, but some of them take it to the extreme and actually make their child sick.
Yes.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Right.
Yes. It could be very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be watched very closely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes trauma causes it, the trauma of having lost a previous child.
All right. Since we are being recorded, let's get down to, we're in Malkuth.
Okay.
So, Stacey,
is that me?
Yeah.
Okay. Said okay. There's no need to push. Jeez, I hate these places. Anyway, how's this going to help me write poems and turn into you? I can't write poetry. Neither could you. Well, what's that mean? Yeah, all right. I'm going to ask him, okay? Listen, excuse me, but do you stock some lame book called The Fantastic Art of Grace Branagh?
I got one copy back here.
There, that aside, I got your book, you nutcase ghost bitch. Wait!
Hey, listen, that's $14.95 for the book. Are you okay?
Uh-huh. Here's some money. Thanks for everything.
Now they're looking at her like she's a nutcase.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay. Yes,
okay. Sir. Promethea. This is, now we're in Yassad. Okay. So, hey, by the way, is the color blue right for Yassad?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yes, it's the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is the place of the moon.
Okay. Yeah. And
the color on the tree is purple, but any of those watery colors there can be associated with it.
Yeah.
Sure. So now you're no longer Stacey, and you're going to be Sophie Promethea.
Oh, that's still me?
Yep.
Yeah, so it's you.
Okay. So you're a Karin. I thought I was headed for the lunar realm, not the land of the dead.
What's the difference? Oh, you're doing it? Okay.
Yeah. What's the difference? After all, the moon governs dreams of the unconscious. The unconscious, in a way, is the underworld, and this river winds through it.
The Styx?
Aye. The ancients thought the dream world and the dead realm were to be one. Where else do we meet the departed, save in dreams?
You said you'd ferried Barbara, the friend I was searching for. Did you transport her to, I don't know, Hades?
Well, hardly. Mainland Hades is for real people. From your friend's dress, I would say your own, I'd assume she was at least half fanciful. Fictions go elsewhere.
What do you mean by, what's that ahead?
It's where fictions-related types go. They call it the houseboat on the Styx.
A house boat. That's not mentioned in mythology.
No, it's not. But you recall that one thing mythology does mention is paying the ferryman.
Well, you see, I'm not actually dead, so I don't have any coins on me.
Really? I think you'll find you. You do.
No, really, I don't. There's nowhere. Wait a minute. This feels like some sort of hidden pocket in my robe. There's something in here.
There, you see? That'll do nicely.
But coins are pentacles. That's one of the four magical weapons. It represents earthly awareness.
Exactly, and you won't need earthly awareness here. Now, come along. I must introduce you to the smallest social set in all of Hades. May I proudly present the Associated Shades.
Excuse me, but that's Shakespeare and Napoleon? I think that's Sherlock Holmes. These are really famous names.
Oh, and Karen isn't, I suppose.
I didn't mean...
Listen, I'll have you know that Chaos was my grandfather and Erebus and Nox were my parents. Us Noxus are aristocracy in Hades.
I'm sorry. No offense was intended.
No, take no notice of me. Nobody else does. Come along. Let's find the captain, Mr. Banks.
Mr. Banks? But that's my... That's Sophie's name.
Yes, we know. You were dead. Not stupid. Skipper, your great-great-grandniece, she's arrived.
Splendid. So you're Sophie. That what is that? Science heroine? Ha ha. Marvelous. I'm John Kendricks Bangs, your distant uncle. I created the houseboat.
Created?
Well, actually, I wrote it. A houseboat on the Styx. Harper, 1896. Heard of it? Let's go down here. It's quieter.
I'm not familiar with your book. I'm sorry.
Well... Oh, okay. That's Karen. Yeah.
Well, no, I don't see where you are. Okay.
Yeah, that's
I'm sorry.
It's Bangs.
That's
Karen? No, it's Bangs.
It's Bangs, okay. Oh, well, that's prosperity for you, I suppose. Don't apologize. It was ages ago.
But with us being related, I should have heard of you.
Well, not necessarily. I died in 1922, ages ago, as I say.
What was your book about?
All this. I discovered the Immateria, or Hades, as it is called. Rather amusingly, I imagined a houseboat. I mean, bobbing on the Styx. You'd admit that's a charming idea. Dr. Johnson, Noah, Charon, Confucius, all the... rubbing shoulders in Hades. Wonderful. Well, that was you supposed to say. Well, I guess it is me saying that, okay. Facts and fictions, intermingling. Years where the 32nd path runs into Issa, the moon realm. Your friends here, you know.
What, Barbara?
Yes, remarkable woman. She came here seeking her husband. Stephen Shelley, the fantasy writer. We get a lot of them, naturally. She's this way. In fact, I'd rather think I saw the pair of them delighting in the moonscape up there on the terraces of Cruelty. Don't be alarmed, it's only a name. I think one of the four Nine Brothers owns it. Probably the Nine of Spades. It's just up here.
I'm laughing.
Mr. Bangs, your usual table?
No. We've come to visit a friend of my great grandniece here.
Hello.
Hello. We want Mr. Shelley. that's hello. You'll be wanting Mr. Shelley's lovely companion.
That's right. You're the Nine of Swords. Are all four nines located in this lunar realm?
Where else? It's the ninth sphere. Bernie, he's coins, runs, clubs, gain. Jimmy Cups, mine's the Lido of happiness.
How come your cruelty?
You'll find out. Now Vito, he's wands. Front of the Tower of Strength, the gymnasium. Mr. and Mrs. Shelley, you have a visitor.
Sophie? Sophie, what are you doing here? Did you die?
No, I came after you. Look, don't let me interrupt your reunion.
Hey, I'm cool.
I think that please.
Yeah. Hey, I'm cool.
Oh, Steve, this is Sophie, my successor, Sophie. This is Steve. Look, let's go talk over here.
Sure, sweetheart. Nice meeting you, Sophie.
Barbara, look, I just came to make sure you were all right, you know, to say goodbye properly. I thought I'd be searching longer than this, but I guess if you've already found your husband.
That isn't Steve.
What?
Oh, he's just how I remember Steve being. In fact, actually, that's sort of a problem. He's just my memory of Steve.
I don't understand.
Sophie, listen, I've talked with him. Hell, I've screwed him. Word for word, stroke for stroke, it's like my fondest memories. And the thing with the real Steve, he was so unpredictable. But this, it's like a recording, an echo, a shade.
Hell, Barbara.
Yeah. I was so happy finding him, but the real Steve's not here. I should move on. I better go tell him.
There, what did I tell you? When romance meets the swords of reason, when you awaken from a beautiful dream, there's cruelty.
Oh, come on, let's go.
So cruelty is a predictable lover. That's good to know.
Why, ladies, are you leaving already? Leaving us already?
Barbara feels we should move on.
Yeah, maybe check out the rest of the moon place.
Ah, nonsense. I won't hear of you two young fillies going unescorted into this boisterous neighborhood. Baron, you too. Lucian, over here a moment. Speak, fellow fabulous. How may we serve thee? My great niece and her companion would visit the moon. Perhaps you'd accompany them. Certainly. We know it well. Two of my noblest shades, the philosopher Lucian and his excellency.
Oh, I missed that.
Baron Bouchard.
Wait, who are these people?
I just lost the page completely.
I'll go on till you come in. Two of my noblest shades, the philosopher Lucian and his excellency Baron Munchausen. They'll take you through the moon realm. Fare thee well, Sophie. You're clearly a valiant descendant.
Goodbye, Uncle. I'll try and visit again sometime. So you're the real Baron Munchausen?
Hardly. There wasn't one, being a shade. I'm more Munchausen by proxy.
Ignore him, ladies.
It's still Karen.
Who?
Karen.
Where are you?
That's
Lucian. Baron here, he's a common breaker. Whose tales of having visited the moon are frankly implausible. Whereas I, Lucien, was carried here by the monster waterspout, as reliably recounted in my true history.
Do you really know if there's one thing simply that I cannot abide? It's a liar. This way, ladies. Once across this lantern bridge, maybe we can behold the lunar citadel in all its silvery splendor.
What's this mean, Yasad? Over the archway.
It's a Hebrew word meaning foundation. I guess it implies that spirituality is founded on imagination.
Naturally, before journeying to the higher sphere, man must first reach the moon. From here, armed with the imagination's vision, man need only look up.
Oh, yes, I see.
See what? What is all that stuff?
It's the Kabbalah, the symbolic planetary system, as seen from here. Come on, let's catch up.
It sure smells good, jasmine or something.
Well, perfume's associated with the moon realm.
Scent is the faculty most closely linked with memory. And the realm of the fictions and dreams is also the realm of memories, as Mistress Barbara knows. Come along further, wonders await yonder.
Now, is that me?
What's this? No, I think it's me.
Okay.
What's this place? It looks like a cave, only more ornate.
It's the shrine of Endymion. Here on the moon, exactly as I said, it was in my true history. Endymion, a shepherd boy who loved the moon goddess Selene, who could only be with her in eternal sleep and dream.
Munchausen.
We can take a peep at him if you like, but we must all be very quiet.
Oh, he's beautiful.
Ugh, he's also sort of aroused looking. I guess he's dreaming about something nice.
He's leading up to Lini, asleep with his javelin in his hand. I described him in my writing.
Wow, yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
It's Idibian's meaning that's important. Being with gods require being in another state of consciousness. He also implies that Yesa governs sexual fantasy.
Yeah, well, I guess Mistress Barbara knows that one too. Sophie, the Steve I'm looking for isn't in this realm. I ought to look further.
If you're seeking the further domains of the Immateria, you'll need transport. Might I suggest our lunar railway? The main station's just ahead.
A railway station?
Certainly. After all, imagination can transport one up anywhere. You may find the station familiar from your dreams. Farewell, dear ladies.
Hey! You know, I did once dream of a station sort of like this. Sophie, look, I still haven't said what it means. You coming after me. You know you don't have to stay with me.
Forget it. I'm sticking with you till you find your real Steve. And then, hey, this is weird. It's like the London Underground Rail map I once saw, except this is the Tree of Life, the Kabbalistic system. Look, there's the abyss where the Thames usually is.
Abyss? That sounds heavy.
Oh, you'll find Steve long before we reach that. Now, let's see. If we're at Foundation, then we're here. There's three possible routes. We can take the Art Line to the Solar Sphere, the Star Line to the Emotional Venusian Sphere, or the Sun Line to Hoth, the intellectual mercurial sphere of writers and magicians.
That sounds like somewhere Steve might have ended up.
Then that's where we'll go. Excuse me, which train takes the Sun Line to Hoed?
Platform 9. Look, love the book, by the way.
What the hell did that mean? Excuse me.
I don't know. Come on, this is our train. It's about to leave. Let's climb aboard.
Wow. Just in time, it's moving.
Great. We'll see somewhere outside our imaginary realm. We'll see the territory of the Sun Path.
Ta-da!
Wow, what a change.
Look, like it's mostly icons of science and reason.
So this 30th path is the rational route, from imagination to intellectual enlightenment.
Yeah, Sophie. How'd you learn about magic so quickly?
Well, I got guidance from my snakes, plus also I slept with Jack Faust. And he loaned me some books on tarot and Kabbalah and stuff.
You slept with Jack Faust? Sophie, kid, you're full of surprises.
Listen, I did it so I'd know enough to find you.
Hey, I meant it admirably. Admirably. I like how you come at solutions sideways. Like, for instance, leaving your earthly duties as Promethea behind. Come after me. How the hell did you swing that one?
Oh, I worked something out. You know, me and my wacky and genius solutions.
Okay, back in Malkuth.
And finally, curse her slutty mom Trish and other bangs I might have forgotten. Listen, this is stupid. I can draw it in a kind of spazzy way, but I can't draw Promethea like you did. I can't get into her. What? No, I heard just fine. I was stunned by the compliment. Although, yeah, I thought I had the flesh tones pretty good, too. In fact, if I just change this arm a little, then... Whoa, I stood up way too quick. What's... Oh, Jesus. Jesus, I feel dizzy. It's gotta be somebody different.
Oh, I say, how simply darling. Sometimes I hurt myself. Next week, it's Mercury rising. Dun, 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 dun. Okay.
Very interesting.
Very, very. Yes, we have this lots of little didactic insights.
I just wanted to say this travel guide, huh? Paul,
yes.
You know the book that you recommended, A River Runs Through?
Yeah.
On Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Actually, on the Zohar tradition of the Kabbalah.
Right.
In that book, all the key rabbis, the key mystics, go no further than Yesod.
Mm-hmm.
And to go as far as Yesod, the realm of Yesod, which is not described in her book as an area of imagination and mankind's dreams and artistic efforts, etc., etc., but rather a mystical, much more mystical realm that the highest rabbis, the highest Kabbalistic mystics reach. Now, there's a tremendous divide, actually, between the way she describes the Tree of Life and the way the Golden Dawn, as treated by Alan Moore, describes the Tree of Life. And I was wondering if Joy and anyone else could address that.
Well, what do you mean specifically?
I'm saying the Zohar, on which theoretically this is based, but the Western Kabbalistic...
Well, actually, that's not true.
Okay, good.
The Zohar itself was not the basis of the Western Kabbalistic interpretation of the Sephirah.
Okay.
Rather, the Yefer Zetzer, I would
book that introduces
the letters.
The tree and the letters develop differently, so there is a profound different conventions in Jewish Kabbalah and in the way Christian Kabbalah and later Golden Dawn Kabbalah develops, and I would assume that Alan Moore's following in the Telemite thing is going through a revamped version of the Kabbalah as understood
as
in the magical tradition of the Telemite magical tradition.
No, I'm sorry
O-T-O
to be saying
and,
okay, fine, thank you.
It would be OTO or AA.
Yeah. Okay.
Not sure,
I think
the Astera or whatever it's called.
Okay. You know what? It's so weird. I'm in world system, I'm a chariot. And in the pagan system, I'm a hierophant. And that goes right across this diagram. Because that's the way it is. That's what I've been told over and over again. They go more astrologically. The pagan system goes more astrologically.
Are you a Taurus?
I'm a Taurus.
Okay, yeah, that's the Hierophant.
And that's the Hierophant. And, but when you add up the numbers, it adds, my birth numbers add up to 34 or 25, and that's, yeah. So that's how it comes. And I go right across that abyss. Plunk. God.
We'll have you as a 16-7.
I'm not a 16, though. My numbers don't add up to a 16. But Johanna's system describes it as the shadow. Is that the way you put it, Johanna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. The shadow would be
that
talent.
That system adds you up to a 16-7.
Yes.
Yeah, they have both cards. You'd be a 16-7 in Tarot School, but Mary Kay Greer, you'd be your soul card and personality card are chariot, but your secret teacher card is tower.
Right, right. That's what Johanna was implying also in her system. So, you know, any way you slice it, you have to bring in the 16, but this is dramatically, you know, if you're using one card, it's obviously a chariot, and in the pagan system, it's hierophant. So, that's pretty, I've never seen it lined up except this way, and on this particular glyph. It's a beautiful glyph. And I've never seen anyone address the abyss this way.
Have you? The abyss goes always through dot.
I know that. But I'm saying with this blue thick line going through chariot or highlighting chariot, veil of the abyss, and hierophant.
Yeah. Those are just the paths that go across
it. Right. But why not highlight? Well, I guess. Why wouldn't the lovers, well, the high priestess is certainly highlighted.
What's God you're talking about?
Yes. Because God is so ignored by world. I am fascinated by God. It makes me real much more curious.
It's Sephira.
Yeah, it's hidden is the basic, the point of it.
Right.
And part of that hiddenness was that it was very rarely ever portrayed. In other words, it wasn't drawn in the tree. They always, you know, they were very clear that the tree of life had 10 sephira, not 11.
Right.
Not 9.
Right.
I think there's a saying like that that's often repeated in the Zohar.
Right.
But the... one of the things is that they've always been very circumspect about talking about it. Now, one of the differences in the Western magical tradition is that they're less circumspect about talking about Doth.
Yeah, I always think of Doth as being the path. halfway, or the gateway into the second half of the tree. You were looking at side A, but there's also a side B.
Mm-hmm.
And on the side B, we find the cliffhoffs, which would be the half of the spectrum.
Yeah, that is forbidden. That's almost like forbidden territory. It's very difficult.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really confronting the deepest, darkest demons. Your shadow.
It will be portrayed in a chapter that'll be coming up along the way. What I'd like us to do is to spend some time on Yasod and on the implications of what the moon means, and also this interesting story, which may be true. In other words, this fantasy novel about the houseboat on Hades, on the River Styx, and where fantasy characters go to live. And think about this in terms of, one, your memories, so functionally memories, but
also... Hamburg would have called them egregores. He made a big deal out of Dostoevsky's egregores.
There is a kind of an extension there.
Oh, definitely.
Between the egregore, which is which usually has like a sociological or a group manifestation.
Right.
Many people believe in these things. Well, yeah, many people believe that Sherlock Holmes is alive. I mean, it's a vivid character.
Well, Sherlock Holmes societies are very, very rampant throughout the United States and England. And we see culturally Sherlock Holmes keeps coming back. It just came back a year ago.
So that
wonderful
you can very
movie.
Easily say that that Sherlock Holmes represents a kind of modern, postmodern egregore.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah. And but let's look at it since one of the things that I thought was fascinating that.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but I do have to say, Mani Sadhu uses the term egregore differently and constantly in his book.
Right, and so how does he use it in his book?
I think his innuendo is that there's much more... I think he's much more the power of the... He doesn't say it, but my sense is that he's much more...
using it in the classical,
that number,
esoteric,
that,
esoteric
yes,
way.
Yes, that
yeah,
number...
Using it as a form of archetypes.
And that number is actually an egregore. Numbers can create egregore.
That's the creative function of the archetypes separated from the higher spiritual intentions.
Right. Okay. All right.
And
that's a better explanation than I could give, certainly.
But
the emphasis is there constantly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but that's why I wanted to deal with Yasod, because here we're dealing with something which we're going to be using throughout, we're using throughout this book. I mean, this graphic novel, which is the power of imagination,
mm-hmm.
the power of seeing things. So in a lot of ways, everything that we're going to be talking about and seeing, we're doing it through the eyeglasses of Yasod. Yasod may be, in other words, even though we may be going high into the tree, we're going to be using the images, the dream images of Yasod. So we're not necessarily leaving.
Promethea is Yasodian, if I can put it that way. I mean, if anyone would be aware of the power of Yasod, it would be Alan Moore and his artists.
But, yeah, obviously we're dealing with graphic novel, but I'm also saying that this is one of the great traditions of Western occultism, that imagination, which is partly alive in memory, and is the provides a way of experiencing things which otherwise are not experienced. It cannot be experienced. So this is so the imagination we can talk to. I can talk to Sherlock Holmes, and I can also
you move up to Yesod, we're into the world of imagination and fantasies and dreams.
And we take the path of the universe.
That's right. It becomes the foundation for the rest of the tree. It becomes the foundation for the spiritual life.
And now we might be getting to why the Zohar mystics never left Yesod.
Because imagination, Alan Moore makes a very important point. With imagination, we create our spirituality. With our spirituality,
One of the ways that we know our spirituality reflectively is through imagination.
Well, think of what mystics do. I mean, St. Teresa's seven casts, her castle with all the rooms in it, and et cetera, et cetera, the seven castles. That was the creation of imagination that allowed her to access her divinity. And it's through imagination that we can access divinity.
Lose yourself.
And lose, yes, you can.
Yes, and it could be very dangerous.
Here's the problem, because you can also believe your imaginings and not test them in a deeper way.
I'm talking about your creativity. Our creativity can be our spiritual path, and is our spiritual path, and it's so undermined in our culture.
Well,
the power of creativity.
I want to be very clear about this, because I do put a lot of value in imagination. I think it's key to much mystical experience. However, I do not wish to claim that it doesn't come with serious deficits.
Mm-hmm.
I've met way too many people who have no discrimination at all. And because they think they can imagine something that way, that's the way it is. And in some ways, one of the things that happens as we proceed along the subway of the Zephyr, we will see that one of the things that, well, what happens to the imagination, which may be fancy and fun in a bizarre way, it can be entertain anything at the level of the foundation, becomes more and more refined, and they become so each one of the Sephira and the paths becomes a way of discriminating, or a way of understanding deeper levels of discrimination. And really important.
Mm-hmm. My point is, after Malkuth comes the Sephira Foundation, Yesod.
Joy has left the conference.
So it's extremely, extremely low down on the tree. I mean, it's essentially one of the first tests we face. Is the test of our imagination, the power of our imagination, and discrimination. I think that's a very...
No, they're not the same thing. They're not. Imagination, in other words, the foundation is what it is. The rest of the Sephira is what it was, is trying to teach you, you know, what is, will of the wisp fantasy. And can also be, you know, and also be expressions of anger and demonic things.
May I relate? If I tell you my personal story, this can help. I was going through, I believe, into psychosis. Really, I mean, totally. I was worried I was going to become a schizophrenic. I had fear. I was having in retrospect, I know it's an initiation. I take it as an initiation, and I was tested. And I mean, to the point of egregorian, if there's such a word, choices between light and darkness, and the nightmares, and the voices, and everything like that. At that time, I came the tarot came available to me, the actual illustration, and the picture. I did the Fool card, already, and that just escalated everything. It totally escalated the situation.
It arrived.
So I was really scared. The next card I did draw to prove that I could do.
Someone came back in. Who came back in?
That was Joy.
Sorry, my phone died.
That's all right. Can you repeat what you said?
Okay. We were taught the subject was the role of imagination and going up the tree of life and how I went through an initiation. When I started the tarot, I did the Fool card first, and that escalated working.
In other words, doing the Fool card made you psychotic.
Emphasized whatever I was going through, because I was going through periods on and off since high school of this, and it was really escalating, and I was scared shitless. I wasn't sleeping at night. I got married. I thought it would end. It didn't end. It was just escalating to the point in which I was hearing voices. So I did the Fool card, and it sort of like really popped the lid, to say the least. Then the second card, in which they asked me to do another card for to see if I could do a tarot deck, and the second card of the major arcana I did was the Death card, and that got me the contract. Now, the very day in which I showed Kaplan the Death card, I was totally exhausted, and I had my portfolio with me, and I was going to art directors. So there was one on my list that was art studio that I had an appointment with an art director, and there in the same building on 3rd Avenue and 57th Street or 53rd Street, something like that. I remember the building to this day. Not exactly the street, but I remember the building. There was a little mini mall underneath, and there was a magical shop called Sephora and the Wizard. And I said, you know what? Let me go in there. So I went in there, and I told them my story. And they gave me the pentacle. And he said you could either have a Wiccan pentacle or you could have the Tetragrammaton. And I took a Tetragrammaton. I started wearing it. Okay, the Seal of Solomon. And everything changed.
Oh, Johanna.
It grounded me. The nightmare stopped. The voices stopped. Everything.
And so for you, and this is probably where the depth of your tarot, is that it was your own way of initiating, was a part of a self cure in terms of self knowledge, growing knowledge.
Yeah, I've been there to the dark side, truly.
From the fool, you went to death. That was your second card. What was your third card?
Well, then I began the series of the High Priestess.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then things became very orderly.
Yeah.
But with the Fool and Death, those were the two cards that represented your psychic crisis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think also it's kind of interesting because, you know, one of the things about death is that sometimes it's related to the death of Sephora.
I didn't know that. How so? I don't even see it anywhere. Let me see on this.
Well, it's not stylized that way.
Okay.
But it's seen that way, that you go. That's what you go through. You go through. You have to go through this death to appreciate these higher things. So I think one of the things the thing I'm trying to get us to think a little more with a little more precision about, as important as imagination is, it's inchoate. It can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It can carry the demonic. It can carry fantasy. It can mislead us, and it can lead us. And the rest of, some ways, the rest of the tree of life is going to sort of show us how to be a potter.
think to work with the clay of imagination.
The point that Johanna made, that I think is very important, is that by wearing, now you wear a pentacle, the seal of Solomon,
right,
which is a tetragrammaton pentacle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the seal of Solomon is a six-sided star, right?
No.
It's a five-sided
mm-hmm.
star? Okay. And that's essentially the protector of the imagination.
It's also the grounding. They described it as the key.
Well, we know that.
No. It's like the secret word to the astral. It allows you to go
safely
through. Safely go through like a more than a protective. It's a protective talisman, but it's also a key to the doorways that you can unlock and lock them. And it was very interesting. It was like I couldn't get over it. In fact, I did have one other thing happen to me within a month's period, is that I was wearing the talisman, and I was like, you get into a vibratory adjustment period with it, and as I'm wearing it, it was a night in which I was driving home from my mother's house. We had our family get together on Wednesday nights, and with my aunt. And as I'm looking behind in the rearview mirror, now this is just up the block from my mother's, I see a card swerving right on my tail, and I thought it was going to hit me. And I'm honking the horn, I'm screaming out loud to my aunt. I'm saying, he's going to hit us. Oh, you know, he's crazy. He's going to hit us. I stop the car, pull this car to the side. I stop it. There was no car behind me. I says, what the hell is going on here? So we get on the highway, and it was a rainy night. And we're traveling on the Belt Parkway going towards Kennedy Airport, because the other roads were all crowded. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible rainstorm, similar to what we had within the last couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And I see that there is flashing lights ahead, and something tells me just to go to the next lane. As soon as I go to the next lane, a white Corvette comes out of nowhere, because I looked at the cars behind me, and I get to the next lane, this white Corvette comes, skids to a stop, loses control, and smashes into a tree in the same lane that I was traveling. But the thing is, we listened to the news.
The
we listened. Excuse me? I had witnesses.
Well, that was the precognitive.
Yeah, that was the precognitive car.
Okay.
And
okay.
I listened to the news. There was. And my aunt listened to the news. I have a witness. This is holding. I have a very mundane witness in the car. We did not hear of any car smash up. And this was a smash-up to end all smash-ups.
Well, sometimes they don't report things, though.
It was horrendous.
Depending on who was in it, yeah.
I mean, we didn't see any person in the car.
Oh, really?
No human. It was like something out of the Egregorian universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay.
And I can vouch for saying nobody's going to jump out of a car on the Belt Parkway.
It was totally totaled. This car was totaled. Totaled.
If people do jump out of cars to mm-hmm. save themselves. But, yeah, I hear you. I believe what you're saying. Now, what do you think it means?
Well, that was part of an
initiative.
It was like the last attempt.
To stop you?
Yeah.
From
proceeding with the psychic work. But it was the last attempt.
With the Sacred Rose Tour specifically?
Yeah.
Or your life in the psychic?
Both.
And how do you, why do you read it that way?
Why? Because I was all being attacked on the astral realm.
Now, why do you think you faced the attack?
Because I it was part of an initiation. That's how I treat psychosis. I treat a lot of people who have gone through schizophrenia and psychosis. And I get them grounded again because I've been there.
Okay.
I have, and these are Christians. They don't come back to me. Nothing, you know. One of them is a church-going Christian. Her daughter was really roaming the streets and everything. She came in. I treated her. And she went her way, and she's living as normal a life as a diagnosed medicated schizophrenic could lead.
Uh-huh.
And I see them at community of functions and everything like that, and they the mother, you know, kisses my hand.
Uh-huh.
You know, that type of thing.
That's very interesting.
One of the things I want to do.
No, let's get back to the. We have to do the reading.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to detract from what you're saying, but what I do want to do is I want to bring it into some of the story that we have in front of us, some of the illustrations.
Yeah. She gives him a pentacle.
How do you pronounce that again? How do you pronounce the guy here, Charon?
Charon.
I've always called him Charon. I'm not sure I'm right.
I don't think I'm right. You pronounced it differently.
I pronounce it Karen, and I don't remember who told me that, because my first teacher pronounced it Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I think you might be correct.
Yeah, because it's a Greek word, and we could look it up in Wikipedia and see.
But Karen is this issue of particularly the meaning of the river Styx, and also the issue of the coin. That, you know, he says, well, one of the things you give me is this coin. And thinking now specifically as the coin as representation of the abandonment of Malkuth. So one of the things, so it really is setting off the thing about, you know, normally what we think, you know, what governs the world is our sense of the everydayness of things, you know, which is, to quote, the real sensory world. Then we go into the dream world where things don't quite behave the same way. And by, quote, giving him the coin, we're separating ourselves from those five senses. Which, you know, is the pentagram in a way of the coin. And of course, one of the ways that you can deal with, you know, attacks in the imagination is you can get grounded in Malkuth, which makes sense if you're alive. But the other thing is that the interesting thing about that's the star that you're talking about, Seal of Solomon, is that it's a map both of keeping you grounded in this world, and it's also a map of how to negotiate the other world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, so which is, you know, which is a genius. So it deals with up and down, both of them. And the
she's willing to give up that real world and move into her realm of dreams and fantasy.
Which here we go.
Very,
I apologize. There is a minor debate. This is from Wikipedia. There is a minor debate over the preferred pronunciation of the name. The practice of following classical pronunciation established for the mythological ferryman Charon, Karen, Sharon, Charon, is used by major English language dictionaries such as Merriam-Webster and Oxford English Dictionary. These indicate only one pronunciation when specifically referred to Pluto's moon with an initial K sound, Karen. Speakers of the languages other than English and many English-speaking astronomers as well follow this pronunciation. However, Christie himself pronounced the CH in the moon's name as SH, and they used the Greek
the Greek, after his wife Charlene. Because of this, an acknowledgement of Christie and sometimes an in-joke or shibboleth, the pronunciation SH is common among astronomers in speaking English. And this is the prescribed pronunciation at NASA and New Horizons. Now, for the, they make a distinction between Charon the moon and Charon the planet.
And Charon the...
And Charon.
Okay, so it's Charon.
Now, the mythical, let's see, we have a huge...
Well, I think Charon the moon is spelled with an I.
They have Charon. The Greek is Charon. The English is K-A-I-R, mm-hmm. with an accent on the R, / U-H-N. So it would be Charon. And the pronunciation that Joy shared with us is the one
used. Yeah, that's the proper, right.
Okay. So we're educating ourselves slowly but surely here.
Yeah, and we still have to go for the reading.
Right. Let's talk about Yesod. What does it look like as a letter, as a Hebrew letter? Anybody remember?
Not a letter.
Yesod is not a letter.
No.
Yesod is a spot, right? Is that what it is? Is it a little dot?
Yod. Yod. Yes.
Yod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The spelling of Yesod, I think Yud Shin Dalet. Is it Yud Shin Vav Dalet or Yud Shin Dalet? I'm not sure. I'm trying to learn my spellings, and I'm not doing a very good job.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, that's something to look up. Yeah. At some point, and also one of the things about also is that given the different spellings for the Sephirah, also might give you show how they have secret things. For instance, Shin,
mm-hmm.
as one of the letters in Yesod could very easily be intimations of the fool, and also Daleth. Daleth, what is Daleth?
It's the emperor.
Pardon me?
Which
door.
Oh yeah,
and which card is it usually related to?
The Empress.
The Empress.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see there that you could also find some interesting Tarot associations.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful, Paul, way of looking at
could you
spelling
that?
Of the Sephirot is to do that, is to take them letter by letter and examine them.
And now the card of the letter.
How did you equate the fool to Shin, Paul?
He's using the old school style.
I'm using the Russian style.
Yeah, it's the Shin is judgment. If Dalet is the Empress, then Shin is judgment.
Yeah. If Dalet is the Empress,
mm-hmm.
then Shin is... Oh, because I thought Shin would be either the fool or the universe, depending on what system you use.
I'm making my couch at Schomburg.
Okay, fine.
Author.
So then we're going to...
I'm getting ready to have an interview with Powell. Within the next month, he's here doing a retreat again, and I'm trying to get him to do an hour interview. When and if it happens, I'll make the MP3 available.
Did anyone
well, if you're
get
going by Schomburg, then Dalet's going to be the emperor.
The emperor, which is very close, is one of the paths to Yesod, as it's
yeah.
the sun.
Yeah, I think it's just something to be sensitive to, so one of the things that I don't know about is the objective truth of the Bangs, Kendrick Bangs association. the PDF.
You mean about the houseboat?
Yeah, that is.
And it's got to be true. He says that. He says Harper, 1896.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
well,
gotta be
yeah,
a
not
book.
Only that, but he also speaks about it in notes as if it's true. I haven't tried to verify it. Outside.
What's his name? Kendrick. K-E-N-D-R-I-C-K. Oh,
it,
I should
it, be that's spelled in the book, in the comic.
I know. I'm going to look it up on the.
Wikipedia.
Kendrick Bangs, and the name of the book. The Houseboat.
Yeah, it's the Houseboat on the River Styx. There's two of them actually. They're mentioned in the notes in the PDF file.
I'm checking to see if it ever was.
Yeah, here it is. There's a whole on fantastic fiction.
And there's, and manybooks.net has the whole book.
So in 1897, John Kendrick's Bang wrote The Pursuit of the Houseboat. The sequel to his 1895 Houseboat on the River Styx. Houseboat was the book that spawned the phrase Bangsian fantasy, or a fantasy of the afterlife in which the ghosts of various famous men and women come together and have various, usually genial adventures. However, Houseboat featured in the ghosts of real people, from Dr. Johnson to Shakespeare to Homer to Napoleon. Pursuit took this idea a step further and showed the ghosts of fictional characters, including Sherlock Holmes, Shylock, Lecoq, Hawkshaw, an old sleuth, interacting, trying to solve the mystery of the missing houseboat, and competing with one another.
This is so interesting. On online-literature.com, they say he was an American humorist, 1862 to 1922, editor, essayist, and lecturer. He inspired the term Bangsian fantasy, which put a name to the fantastical style of writing of the afterlife, which was so much like his own, and then had been seen early in such masterpieces as The Description of Hell and The Voyage Across the River Styx in the Epic of Gilgamesh. And then they go on about his past, about his life. Marriages.
Okay, one of the other things that is played with here is the, they called it the Brothers Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the Four Brothers Nine, which are the, following the, this is page 10, panel 4, and page 11, panel 1. The unnamed Nine of Swords reveals his brothers' names and their occupations. Bernie, the Nine of Coins, runs Club Gain, and this is right out of Toth. Jimmy
has arrived.
Lido of Happiness, Vito Nine of Wands, the Tower of Strength, Gymnasium.
Morning, Paul. This is Dave.
Has left the conference.
So, I just wanted to point that out in terms of the symbolism for the number nine here.
Mm. I thought it was very interesting, the Nine of Swords. It comes up in a lot of romance readings, believe it or not, that I've had recently.
Cruelty?
Yeah.
But you notice the cruelty is got here is the... the predictability of fantasy in a way. I mean, there's an aspect of fantasy that is...
A romance,
not just romance, not just fantasy. Fantasy romance that is very predictable, thereby not interesting.
Well, just the thing of the fantasies can be very narcissistic also, and it has a very, and then when you hit reality, it's like, oh, God, really? Yeah, this is my real world. This is what I got to do.
You bring up a very interesting point, because in our society, in our there's a huge movement that what we think, Ernest Holmes, Norman Vincent Peale, working with affirmations, that our minds create our reality. So our imaginations do create our reality.
And that's true. And that's but the thing about it is that you need to train your imagination to create your reality according to the real, not according to your desires. That's your basic difference.
Well, he called the nine of the sword, the screen.
Could you say that a little bit more clearly? I didn't understand you, David.
That she says that the nine of swords of spades is the screen.
Who says?
Pamela Eakin.
Pamela Eakin. You sound underwater. Does anybody else have that issue?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's either his microphone or I don't know if he's using Skype or whatnot. But just,
I am Skype.
We can't hear you clearly, David.
We can't hear you, David. You're not coming through at all.
I'll go back on the phone. Okay.
Okay.
The, okay, we're at 11:30. Hello? We're at 11:30. Shouldn't we tackle the reading?
Considering what we've talked about this time, the readings we got, we started with the universe, God. You know, we're in Yisod, so here this is interesting. We got the universe, which
just going straight to Yisod.
Yeah, foundation Yisod.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we have the hierophant.
Hi, I'm David. I'm back.
Has arrived.
We have three hierophant figures. We we have Karen. We have. Munchausen and Lucian, all of whom represent hierophant figures in terms of that they're showing the mysteries of the imagination.
I would go even further when he characterized pictorially Shakespeare, Sherlock Holmes. Was it Mark Twain?
But they don't talk or interact.
No, they don't. But I think it's like an additional, you know, he tips his hat to them, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. There's a lot of that going on here. And then we have. But let's look at the Queen of Coins and the Nine of Cups as air and earth here. The Nine of Cups
would be water. Do we have a
No. It's in the position of earth.
Oh, okay.
It's in the position of earth. But being the Nine of Cups, it's kind of so. They're kind of saying it's sort of. But in terms of. You know, assuming we're not dead, how do you deal with this creative situation? In some ways, we're Yisod is like air in a way. So so it deals again with the Queen of Coins. There's a kind of what I'm seeing is a relationship to. Being settled in yourself, your body, comfortably settled. The Queen of Coins being secure, particularly in the place here of air, in the third place, being settled in yourself and your things, so that you can deal with this imaginative power.
You also have the nine water, the essence of water fertilizing earth. You know, the happiness, the fulfillment.
Yeah. Right.
I have a hard time with the term happiness. That's you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, sometimes happiness is a slice of pizza to me. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
and sometimes it's
and
not.
Then, of course, what comes up as in the below and above are eights.
Mm-hmm.
Eights of wands and eights of swords. You know, both of which represent a striving, almost a masculine striving towards transcendence.
Right.
In the Aura Selma Tarot, yellow predominates in the coloration of the way the picture is.
Uh-huh.
With the Nine of Cups are like a rainbow behind, a man staring into a pool of water with the sickle moon reflected. And ironically, a little mouse is at the very, very beginning of the Nine of Cups, at the first cup. But yellow on yellow is the colors, are the colors representing the Nine of Cups.
Yeah, but we're dealing with the Toth deck.
I know. But I don't know. I always do a comparative.
Well.
You know, Toth uses it as happiness, but it's also called the wish card in many other decks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the feeling you get here, that it's more of a wish card.
It probably makes more sense as a wish.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, the whole point of the chapter has to do with the nature of fantasy. And as this is a commentary, if we take the first four cards as a commentary specifically on what the nature of fantasy is.
Yeah. To me, that is, happiness is fantasy to me.
Oh my God, why would you say that?
I don't go with the concept. To me, it's like a word that means it's nothing. It has nothing. It's you can use other words. When people ask me in a reading, will I be happy? I said,
I see.
They believe it's a perpetual state of being. And then I say, well, tell me, every single desire is met at every single moment? That's what you're saying happiness is. I desire... Brad Pitt. He's not going to show up at my door.
Well, the tone of the term happiness is really butchered in our culture today. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And particularly as
a capitalistic society. Happiness for some people is clean water to drink.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I that's why it's so interesting that it's in the realm of fantasy, the card called happiness.
I see what you're saying.
I wouldn't overemphasize the happiness aspects of. I mean, that term as directive. I don't take any of the Toth names on the cards as directive. In fact, one of the ways I think I shied away from the deck for a while,
mm-hmm.
is I found that the names as directive were,
Yeah. If you look at the illustration, it's interesting. It's one card fills another card, like a fountain. Like a perpetual fountain.
Are you talking about the arc of influence, the chariot?
No, the nine of cups, happiness. It's almost like each element fulfills, each cup fulfills the other cup. It's a fountain look. It's a something sort of perpetually going on and on and on, and it's a state of being. Possibly when Barbara finds her Steve.
I've also felt that was the Nine of Cups also related to a kind of path working that's going on there. According to this thing, energetically, this is Nine of Cups is the highest form of love, the love of God, and that's the reason why I put in the idea of the path working is because what it's showing there is a way that the higher realm is integrated in a way that's different, and is different than the regular path.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it that way.
Yeah. And then we have the Arc of Influence.
Yeah, and here, of course, it's basically, I see it as sort of the Eight of Wands and the Eight of Swords being the, being the sort of what's being commented upon when it comes to this arc of the Chariot and the Two of Cups and the Two of Swords. And in that way, this, what we see here is not only the idea of the path, which we could see as the Chariot saying we're going to go places, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're on our journey. But they're also saying that things are settled. Like you could say that the Two of Cups could represent Sophie and Barbara, two women who like each other on their way, seeking peace.
I think what they're doing on this whole thing is moving out. The Eight of Swords there is an initiation. I remember we're all talking about the Eight of Swords as being an initiation point.
Right.
Stepping into the temple. And they're moving out of the confusion of the fantasy and the dreams, and the Chariot is taking them on a new path. You talk about love, the Two of Cups as being love, and then they find peace and moving into Hod. They find something, they're moving out of the confusion into the more intellectual and the more structured thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the Eight of Swords is related to Hod, law through air.
Right.
Now restricting structure here.
We haven't looked at the pictures, but I think the pictures are very evocative too of that.
Yeah.
When you look at the pictures of the moon on when she's the towers there, and those the towers on the moon card, and moving into the light behind the moon, I think that's very evocative of the the moon card. And then you see the towers. I don't quite understand what's on that page where it has the foundation. And when they're talking about the shepherd boy?
Yeah.
What were those two, stelas or whatever they're called, where they have the, they're towers, I suppose. The shrine.
Yeah, that was him dreaming of, the only way he could be with his goddess lover was in his dreams.
But those are two towers again. And then down at the bottom of the page, there's two torches that are in the same parallel position.
Well, that's a good point, because Yesod is on the middle pillar, and so all those repetitive double pillar images would indicate...
Mm-hmm.
The right and the left, the choice between the two. Well, that again, going back to the Toth card readings, the choice, the Two of Cups and the Two of Swords, could also be representative of this of the choice between these two.
Well, and I think yes, and to go further with that, focusing on the middle pillar idea, that with all the choices that we have, to focus on that centeredness.
Hi, it's Bate. I'm David. I'm back.
Has left the conference.
Do we scare him away?
I don't know.
His phone battery doesn't sustain 2-hour calls very well.
Oh.
And this has always been a problem with David's for years.
We could get a new phone.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. Maybe we'll take up a collection and say.
It's like, it's almost like schizoid activity.
I didn't help it. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
No problem.
Well, I want to look at the Endymion. Oh, here we go. It's just got a moon on either one of those seals. That's probably the best word for it, isn't it?
The Chariot, in the Arc of Influence, the Chariot card speaks of like a magical control of a situation, do you think? I mean, and also...
I think it's the use of imagination taken to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Taken to transcendence.
Yeah.
I think in the Toast deck, I think what makes this really relevant is that he's holding the Grail.
Right.
Right.
In this card. So the idea of... just exploring the idea between movement and between maintaining, holding that Grail, and how the Grail might relate to imagination and receptivity and some other things that we could associate with the moon or with Yesod, I think there's a lot probably to be examined in that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also the idea of the Sephiroth as the underworld journey, that with the,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the chariot, we have the hero setting off on the underworld journey, and everything before the chariot, you could see, are aspects of the call to the journey.
So, on the glyph of the Tree of Life?
I'm looking at the major arcana, you know, Fool's Journey.
Okay.
Everything
okay.
before, you know, which are, you know, as the...
Did anyone... I'm looking at the chariot card. Do you realize he's in a yoga position?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even know if there's really anyone there or whether it's just armor.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Which is an interesting point, because a lot of ways the interiority of...
Hi, Paul, I'm back.
Has arrived.
The interior aspect of the charioteer doesn't really develop until he's along on the underworld journey.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually say the message might be different, that a yogic stance... a yoga being well versed in yoga is protection itself and protects your holy grail.
I guess you could look at it that way. Yeah.
Well, he went into tantric magic. We know that...
Victory over the self.
Crowley went into tantric magic also,
mm-hmm.
and actually used the base kundalini energy to its most profound applications.
One thing is that right after the chariot, we're thinking of the charioteer as being only armored, in other words, not necessarily having a full self. The next card that occurs, and this is based on the Fool's Journey, is Adjustment,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know...
What Fool's Journey are you following?
I'm going by Toth. So it, you
okay.
know,
okay.
You know,
okay. So, fine.
And you know, so the next card that comes up is Adjustment.
Okay.
And here you have the image on the card is quite clearly a stylized version of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also see it as that it's the person coming to. You know, a development of who they are on the inside. You know, who they are, who they need to be. In other words, it's part of the underworld journey, which comes to a deeper completion in the hermit.
Well, you could say in this incarnation, this is who you have to be.
Yeah.
And in the hermit shines a light on that and explicates it.
Right, and then of course, then from that you have Fortune,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Fortune is, and then interesting for is you know, Lust comes up next, and it's interesting that Lust comes up after Fortune. You know, Fortune shows us, you know, how things move in the world.
But lust is when we want to, you know, sort of direct the wheel, which is a different way of taking, looking at strength. That strength then can be both a good thing, and it can also be a bad thing, you know, because looking backward, it's us trying to, you know, make the wheel work for us to make it happen in one way rather than another.
I forget who wrote the book, but it was Lust for Life about Van Gogh, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And in that sense, in that expression or title or a little pithy phrase, lust for life, which is used all the time, you get a different tonality of the term lust.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from strength to the card lust, as depicted in the Toth Tarot, and then to the phrase lust for life, you have three different expressions.
And
we can
also go back to the way Barbara used lust and how the number nine of what was it, the Nine of Swords?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how the Nine of Swords
mm-hmm.
is cruelty.
Mm-hmm. She's talking, yes, because she talks about her fondest memories and the fact that she screwed him and talked with him in the same little blip that's sort of twofold over on the other page.
And also her fantasy is, well, when she comes across him, the fantasy of the youth, and she's not youthful anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
over the hill. She wants.
That is cruel.
I'm sorry. Well, that's it. That's the over the. You know what
cruel.
I'm saying? It's
course.
Almost like. And so she. That's cruel. That is cruel. You know, is that she, of all the Steve she comes across is this allusion to the youth, and she's can't even function that way anymore. She's old
mm-hmm.
and she's
mm-hmm.
weathered and she's postmenopausal, whatever you want to say.
Okay, now what's interesting is that she is in Yasad, and she sees Steve as he was in his youth.
Right,
and in
the 20s, and when they, yeah, possibly when.
Now, why can't she imagine herself as the beauty she was in her youth? She is in Yasad.
But she's...
Well, she could if she were... If she were oriented that way, but she's not oriented that way. She's looking sort of outside of herself, so she just herself as portrayed is a given. You know, it's you know.
At the moment of death, herself portrayed at the moment of death.
It's not so much the moment of death. It's herself as given, because she's also partial. She's been Promethea guy too. So
she looks like a pretty worn out. Promethea here.
Yeah, well, she did that in when she was acting like Promethea too.
I think it's really Alan Moore's very, very, and Johanna's very insightful take on the Nine of Swords. Actually, I think he did it on purpose. He could have portrayed her another way, and still have been true to Yasad, but not to the Nine of Swords. He wanted to depict the Nine of Swords more so than the Nine of Coins, the Nine of Cups,
mm-hmm.
etc. That's the card we're all looking at, and the card Alan Moore is pointing out.
Well, it's also
the
foundation. The foundation is the given.
But so are all the other cards.
The nines.
I'm saying his preference, his focus, the way he's directing his reader
mm-hmm.
Is brilliant, because mm-hmm. that's what we're all going to ignore, aren't we? I'll speak for myself. And he's pointed out a great truth.
Yeah.
He hasn't shown the tough depiction. He's shown the classic kind of Marseille, I guess, for want of a better word, of the Nine of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting.
There are variants like that, and the question that comes up is whether those are the artist license of Williams or were they actually directed by Moore, because Moore was apparently in his script writing was pretty clear how he wanted things drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So saying this is the way he wanted it drawn.
Well, you could say that, yeah. I mean,
okay. So that's what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that he's...
Well, the cruelty of imagination. The cruelty...
When it comes to romance.
Yeah.
He's being very specific. I'm surprised... He's almost hitting us on the head because we don't have cups here, which would be a more romantic card. Leastways in the Universal or the Rider-Waite depictions,
mm-hmm.
you could say. But he's using romance and the idea of love with swords.
Yeah.
He's hitting us on the head with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, who hasn't been hurt?
Something to possibly address this, but the spears on the middle pillar, Yesod and Tiferet and Keter, are all associated with the element air.
Mm-hmm.
Yesod.
So, even though Yesod is the moon, which seems very watery, it's correspondences, it associates to air.
Which is
the idea that he's using the swords might be a reflection of that.
Now, who did that association? Is that Odo's association?
That I learned in Golden Dawn stuff. I don't know where it derives from, but there are the middle pillar, except for Malkut, which is the element earth, the other middle pillar, Sephirot, or air, and then Bina jumping across over to Chesed, jumping back into Hod. That triangle is water, and then Chokhmah, Gevura, and Netzach are fire. But what's relevant, but you start in the initiation process in the Golden Dawn, you start in Malkut, which is earth. You go into Yesod second, and this is the pattern he's following, Yesod second, which is air, and then you go into Hod, which is water, and then over to Netzach, which is fire. So that's the, you know, and which, of course, is the reverse of the Tetragrammaton elemental association.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is we're going to be definitely dealing with the issue of air coming up next thing with Chapter 15, Mercury Rising.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm trying to point out, Paul, is that I'm trying to point out the paradox.
Yeah.
The paradox of that, because Hod, although Mercury, which is air, is also the element water by this other thing. So it's just something to keep in mind.
I think I'm even illustrating the point. When we say I think, we're really drawing on our own imaginative resources. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's just the way it is. But we apply the term... Or world does, and we've all worked with Joy hasn't, but the rest of us have worked with world system, to think of it as the intellectual area, the thinking, Jung's thinking, imagination comes in a great deal. It is extremely Yesodian.
The problem with air, particularly as swords and or at the intellectual, is that you're dealing with varieties of discriminations,
mm-hmm.
some of which are discriminations that lead nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're useless discriminations, and then there are useful discriminations, and again. And that's one of the reasons why swords tends to be also contentious. And the reason why is that you have this imaginative base, which in a lot of cases, people who are really into the air are not going to look at their imaginative base for this. They're going to be thinking.
My point, Paul, was that swords is a very imaginative base.
I'm not
saying that it's not imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that it's imagination without self-recognition, that there's a lack of, and that one of the ways that that Swords gets calmed and imagination gets deepened is through cups, is through the water.
Well, creativity studies have shown that the human mind will focus on the negative much more so than it will on the positive. That's the latest on creativity studies. They're working on creativity courses.
Actually, one of those professors is here. She's got a book called Positivity, which is actually a good book, except for the language of it.
Mm-hmm.
But her ideas are really good. She says basically it's a 60-40 split. That
mm-hmm.
most people are 60-40 negative and are thereby kind of things. She said if you can push it the other way, do you get a 60-40 positive?
Mm-hmm.
You're doing much better. And that
and really the idea to assist your imagination
empowering.
Is to work that way.
Well, but part of that empowering of positivity has to do with cups. Not with the overvaluing of Swords, which
Correct.
Is contentious.
Correct.
Yeah, that's I mean, in terms of talking tarot talk.
Okay.
You know, that's all.
Okay. There. One other thing.
And I guess we're out of time.
Mm, yeah. I just want to mention one thing: the middle pillar exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is very much in the air. It's the middle pillar being the High Priestess and the Akashic Record, and doing it. It's a very important exercise. Israel Regardi would never let you do it unless you cast a full ceremonial circle. And he's written a whole book on it, but it's very interesting.
The middle pillar, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Is anyone else into Israel Regardi? Joy, do you use him?
Yeah, I've read a number of his books.
And what do you think?
I like him pretty well for the most part. I do the middle pillar exercise all the time without even doing a lesser vanishing pentacle ritual
mm-hmm.
first, so...
Mm-hmm. No, good. I've done
really
it without the circle.
There's anything dangerous
at all
about the middle pillar.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've done the middle pillar also without casting a circle. So that is interesting too. I didn't find it, you know, the heavens didn't open up and swallow me, neither did, you know.
Well, and considering where I've been, I should have been swallowed up by the demons or whatever a long time ago.
Do you work with this, David? Have you done the middle pillar exercise, and did you do a banishing circle?
No, I haven't. I have a question before we close up here, Paul. On the page where they have the glyph, the train station,
mm-hmm.
the young man,
platform
9. Love the
right.
book, by the way. Who is that guy? It says the note says it's Rich Vich. Vich. Have you looked that up? It looks like an inside joke. That the Ethian Stacy don't even know who it is. Barbara don't even know.
It's based on what's his name, something rather of the moon, which is the Lucians. And it's imaginative work that Lucian wrote. He was a late antique writer.
Well, it says here on the notes, it says also from JHW3. Oh,
right.
That's the illustrator.
That's the illustrator, okay.
Right.
Because the pointing the way and commenting on the book is Rich Reich. And he is mentioning the book, he's referring to the Promethea comic itself. Makes your head hurt just a little bit, doesn't it? So that's an inside joke. I mean, that is...
Yeah, it is an inside joke.
Yeah.
And that self-referential stuff happens in a variety of places along the way.
And look at the figure of death off to the left of Alan Moore in that little cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the skeleton. There's two skeletons, right.
I only see one.
There's one shrouded on the right and one towards the other shoulder of Alan Moore.
Okay.
I don't see that skeleton. It's not clear in mine.
Really? Stands out.
If I zoom, it's smaller.
She's talking about the picture above on the top of the page.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You saw the one below. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So it was an interesting conversation today. I don't know if anybody else will think it was interesting. But we've recorded it anyway. So thanks, everybody, for showing up. And Mercury Rising next week. I hope we all get here.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Great joy.
My intrepid Promethean.
Right. Bye-bye.
Okay.